It's Black History Month at Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Babb. This is our final conversation with Russell Stevenson, and we'll talk about the LDS Church in Africa. Did you know that Nigerians in the 1960s, and even in the 1950s, I learned, have asked for LDS missionaries to come teach about the gospel to them? It's pretty surprising that they did this without any LDS presence in Nigeria. Russell Stevenson will talk more about this in our next conversation. I hope you check it out. Before you do that, I just want to mention that we've got our Black History Month sale this month. So we've got Paul Reeve, Darren Smith on sale, as well as you can get Margaret Young's talk about Jane Manning James, an early Black Mormon pioneer, for just $3. We've also got our latest transcript with Locke Mackay and John Hamer that's on sale, so please check that out. Also, if you'd like a transcript of this book, please be a monthly subscriber, and I will send you a PDF as soon as it is released, probably this week or next for sure. So you can really help us out with that if you'll subscribe. Now back to our conversation. Before our conversation started, you did mention here, and I want to spend a little bit of time on that you're going to be spending some time in Nigeria.
That's correct.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. For the past 4 years, through the support of the State Department as well as the support of Michigan State University, I have become conversant in the Igbo language. Now, Igbo is the major ethnic group in eastern Nigeria as well as in northern Cameroon. Now, the reason I became proficient in the Igbo language is the Latter-day Saint community in Nigeria is overwhelmingly Igbo. I mean, there are other ethnic groups. There are Hausa, there are Yoruba, there are people in Benin, and some very prominent members in Benin, actually, who have who have substantial civic authority. But most people are Igbo. Now, I am currently in a PhD program at Michigan State University. I'm working under Dr. Wando Achebe. She is the daughter of Chinua Achebe and is also a fantastic scholar of religion and gender in Nigeria in the 20th century. And she recruited me several years ago to write a dissertation on Mormonism in Nigeria. You know, she had seen some of the records that were available at Brigham Young University as well as at the Church History Library and was very impressed by them. And she feels like they offer an excellent opportunity to talk not just about religion in Nigeria, but also post-colonialism within Nigeria. Like, what does it mean for there to be an American religion that, you know, takes hold, not through missionary efforts, but through indigenous reading of texts, of scriptures, you know, without any kind of American institutional presence, in a Nigeria that has recently rid itself of official foreign influence, right? We're, you know, Nigeria was now independent by the time Mormonism had taken on. And yet here you have these people who are so actively trying to call themselves by this foreign religious name. So my dissertation is an effort to understand the origins, the impact, the meanings of those religious communities in Nigeria from the 1950s until the dedication of the Aba Temple in the 21st century.
Oh, wow.
So 2005.
Can you? I know Greg Prince has talked a little bit about the missionary work in Nigeria. Can you give kind of a brief thumbnail sketch of how that all started out?
So, yeah, to very brief, you know, throughout the 1950s, a number of church leaders are getting letters from various Nigerians in Cross River, in Igbo land, elsewhere, you know, begging for missionaries, asking for some kind of missionary presence. The initial response by David O. McKay and others was some level of skepticism. You know, maybe they're just looking for an opportunity to make money. They're just looking for, you know, white people to give them business. You know, maybe looking for a new source of patronage now that the British influence was beginning to recede. And, you know, by 1960, you know, it was officially turned over to Nigerians. In 1960, David O. McKay, in the first presidency, they send Glenn Fisher, who had once been a mission president in South Africa, to see what's happening on the ground, right? Are these potential converts legitimate? Do they in fact want to join the LDS Church, or are they just looking for some kind of business opportunity? And Glenn Fisher returned with a report that was gushing, right? Saying these people they're the real deal, right? They crave Mormonism. They crave the LDS Church. And then the next year, the first presidency again sends a set of missionaries, this time Marvin Jones and Lamar Williams, to ask the same questions that Glenn Fisher had. Now, Marvin Jones, he was an interesting guy because, you know, he loved Pat Boone. You know, he's from Bountiful, Utah. You know, he was very milquetoasty kind of Utah. A very milquetoasty kind of person. And according to Lamar Williams' recollection, you know, Marvin Jones, again, he wouldn't strike you as this all-American farm boy, but, you know, kind of a little bit scrawnier, right? Point is that Marvin Jones and Lamar Williams, you know, they didn't really strike you as people who'd be terribly attuned to, you know, the indigenous cultures and societies of Africa. And how would you expect them to be, right? I mean, that wasn't their experience by any stretch. So they go there and they come away with the same conclusion that Glenn Fisher had come away with. That these people are the real deal. They are legitimate. They, in fact, crave Mormonism. In fact, Lamar Williams went further. He said, ultimately, we cannot keep the priesthood from these people. Essentially, it's only a matter of time.
What year is this?
This is in 1961.
61.
Yeah.
So that's pretty prophetic.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, I should note too, you know, this isn't the very first time that you have Nigerians, you know, like kind of communicating this kind of thing to missionaries. And we have evidence all the way back in 1950 of a Nigerian reverend approaching missionaries in New York City, asking for a missionary presence.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is all throughout the post-war period. I'm only talking about the period in which the activity is most sustained.
Wow, that's interesting. So, so what happened in about 1961 or so?
So, 1961, the missionaries had come back again. The same report. Lamar Williams, like, listen, these people are the real deal. We cannot, you know, keep the church or ultimately the priesthood from them. So, over the course of the next year or so, the First Presidency begins to plan an actual mission to Nigeria. Missionaries were called, they were set apart, they were waiting in upstate New York to go to Nigeria on visas, right? But it's around the same time that there is a man by the name of Ambrose Chukwu. He was an exchange student in California, Igbo, Nigerian, and he becomes aware of John Stewart's book, Mormonism and the Negro. And in this book, it basically echoes all of the same sorts of racist theories that have been used to explain why peoples of African descent should not or need not hold the priesthood. They're descended from Cain, they're descended from Ham, they're cursed. In the premortal life, they were less than worthy. All of the standard explanations that Latter-day Saints told themselves. It was not a radical document. It fit within the mainstream. And it made its way into the hands of Ambrose Chukwu. He's outraged. He writes a letter to the Nigerian government. He's very aware of increased attempts by Mormons to send missionaries there. They said, we can't let these madmen, he used that word, madmen, enter our country with their racist theology. So the Nigerian government decided to deny all Mormon missionaries visas from that time onward. In 1964, Lamar Williams went back and he tried to kind of mend fences, but it wasn't long after that the Nigeria-Biafra War broke out. And before that time, Lamar Williams was recalled back to Salt Lake. He didn't fully understand why, but it became clear that the tensions were running hot enough that it was not a good place for Americans to be at that time. And plus, after the war broke out, many of them were not allowed in anyway.
Oh, wow. So that kind of shut down missionary work.
Yeah.
In 1964, you said, because of this, basically a civil war, is that right?
Well, that was before, the civil war didn't break out until about 1967.
Oh, okay, but there were rumblings.
There were rumblings, right? I mean, the tensions were clear. I mean, oil had been discovered in eastern Nigeria, and you know, the Nigerian federal government, they wanted to keep it for themselves. I mean, this is very much a thumbnail explanation, but that is a conventional response, is that this was ultimately a fight over oil. So, you know, the Latter-day Saints, they pulled out by 1964 because, I mean, Lamar Williams didn't fully understand it, but clearly somebody did and thought it would be wise for the church not to be there at that time.
Okay. All right, and then following the 78 revelation, is that when missionary work came back?
Yes, fall 1978, that's when you have the West African Mission established. That is Ghana and Nigeria inclusive.
Okay. And then hasn't missionary work just exploded since then?
it has been extensive, and in fact, there was a time period where they were baptizing so many people that the mission president in the West Africa Mission told them to stop. Wow. He actually put on a baptism ban because it was one of those things missionaries could just walk out in the middle of the street. They could, at the very least, teach 10 people with absolutely no effort whatsoever.
So as I understand it, even back in the 60s, there were actual congregations in Nigeria. Is that right? Or was that in Ghana?
There were congregations in Ghana as well. I'm focusing on Nigeria.
Okay. That tried to call themselves the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
In fact, I've written an article on those Mormon congregations in Ghana for the Journal of Mormon History. It was back in 2015.
Oh, okay. So I haven't seen that. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
So I'll see if I can provide a link with that.
All right.
So.
Great.
Well, great. Well, it sounds interesting. Are there any other projects you're working on?
You know, there are several other projects that I'm working on. Right now, I really want to get my arms around how race has played within the Latter-day Saint community locally on a global basis. Right. One of my working hypotheses is that race within Mormonism is local as much as it is global, and certainly as much as it is theological, right? It has to do with interpersonal interactions, and it's informed by your relationships with other people as much as it is as these larger structures. So I am currently in the process of, you know, compiling a volume that is dedicated to these local dynamics.
Wow.
So, yes, lots of exciting things in store for the study of race and Mormonism. There's some great writing coming out from Jared Hickman. Max Mueller obviously has had some wonderful things to say. Paul Reeve has really blown the discussion wide open with his whiteness thesis. So lots of avenues, lots of opportunities, lots of potentialities.
All right, I was talking with somebody and he's like, hasn't everything already been said?
No, absolutely not. The only reason we would say everything has been said is because we are looking at the question through a blinkered vision.
Well, great. Thanks, Russell, for spending some time here, and appreciate you talking here on Gospel Tangents.
My pleasure to be here.
Thanks a lot. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Russell Stevenson. I'd really like to thank Russell for spending so much time talking to us about Elijah Abel and the LDS Church in Africa. Thanks, Russell. It was a lot of fun. In our next episode, we'll continue to focus on Black History Month with Dr. Newell Bringhurst. He's written several books on Mormon Black history, and we'll talk more about how polygamists feel about the 1978 revelation from Spencer W. Kimball.
The fundamentalist Mormons, you know, they consider the 78 revelation as one more indication of the heresy or the wrong path taken by the mainline LDS church, along with the fact they abandoned polygamy and that.
Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you like our page on facebook.com/gospeltangents. You can subscribe at YouTube at youtube.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at @gospeltangents, as well as make sure that you subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss any of our episodes. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our videos. Thanks again.